Then Rao Ramakrishnan, who actually co-founded the first ACM SOC 10 years ago. And he's also been a key figure in the cloud computing industry. So I don't think Raghu really needs an introduction. Everyone here who's taken a database class has probably read his very famous textbook on data management. He was a professor at University of Wisconsin-Madison for many years, and then he decided to join the industry. He was a Yahoo fellow. I actually think I was an intern at Yahoo when he was a VP there. So, you know, he's always been a great source of inspiration for myself and many others in the database community. He later joined Microsoft, which is where he's now a technical fellow. He's also the CTO of data at Microsoft. As you can imagine, he's achieved a ton throughout his research career, many 10-year best paper awards at premier conferences and some really prestigious awards such as ACM Edgar Codd's Innovation Award or CKD Edward Codd's CKDD's Innovation Award. So without further ado, I would like to give a very warm welcome to Raghu.
Thank you for the time. Okay, I hope closed captioning is working. So what can I say? I work at Microsoft, but I don't quite know how to use all our products. Okay, it's a real pleasure to be here, and happy birthday, 10 years of SOC. And somewhere, Doug Terry, who was chair of SigOps, he's smiling. SigOps, SigMod, we discussed whether we needed to create a new Sig for cloud, but said the better thing to do was to have a jointly sponsored conference where the two communities could come together. So that was the origin. And looking ahead, I wanted to get some sense of how topics changed over the course of the 10 years of SOC. So thanks to Carlo for these word cloud analysis. The first one, the thing that pops out at me, there's cloud and there's data. Somehow I wasn't surprised. So we took out those two words, right? Then a few more things popped. It's about scale, systems, storage. One thing I was surprised in this whole thing, I just saw 1 year when data center was reasonably prominent, and that was way back when in 2011. I would have expected to see a lot more of that. I was also surprised by something else I didn't see, machine learning. I don't see that. And actually, you should be thinking about that. So without further ado, let's keep going. What's happened in the 10 years? I remember 2006, 2007, AWS had already established a public cloud. Inside of Yahoo, we brought together all the different teams that were doing what we would call platform or cloud, and we called that the cloud computing division. I made a key contribution. I designed the logo for the t-shirt. So it's important, man. Okay. And when I look back, the field has come an enormous way, both technically and in terms of adoption. Okay. So few data points on perhaps why. Keep in mind that the explosion of data is going to be really triggered going forward, not just by traditional means, but through all kinds of observation. Anything you observe, you have a chance to improve upon. Okay? That's the flywheel. And the flywheel, you observe everywhere, bring data together, maybe get some insight, but then you push your decisions out. That's the flywheel that I see emerging. If you look at companies that are born cloud native or born in the digital age, they're beginning to have huge amount of success, right? The prediction, this is scary, 60% of all computing will be in the cloud by 2025. Already that percentage is well into the double digits, right? How many, you guys are too young. Thomas Watson, back in the 50s, said something that he was laughed at for decades. So he announced the IBM mainframe. And they asked him, how many of these do you think you're going to sell? He said, 5. Then he said, wait, maybe 6. Okay? And then as computers, supercomputers, all classes of computers sold in the hundreds of millions, they laughed. But then keep in mind that he was thinking of a mainframe connected to places all over the world where people would submit jobs, right, and wait for results. He was a man ahead of his time. He was thinking of public clouds. And if you ask me, how many public clouds? 3. Oh, wait, Alibaba, 4. Maybe sometime there'll be someone else. Yeah, 4 or 5, right? It's come full circle. This is the world. And if you look at how that 60% is shaking out, this is an extremely expensive game to play in. Okay, as you will see. All the major players are growing. And by the way, this is not total market share. I didn't have those numbers. This is for companies with, say, 1,000 employees, medium to large enterprises. All three are growing. It's a race. Okay? And cloud is not pure cloud. Even today, it's a hybrid story. That last part, people who are private cloud only, that is going to shift, okay? And it's shifting rapidly. So it's the whole ecosystem is moving to the left. If you look at what a cloud is, you think of the data centers. In the case of Azure, there are 54 of them growing. AWS, Google, similar story. The exact number may differ. These are gigantic, right? In certain countries, the energy consumed in data centers is 30-40% of the total energy output. Worldwide, energy consumption is in the double digits, meaning as a fraction of total energy, how much goes into all of this. Surprisingly, and I couldn't find the graph for this, over the last 5-6 years, the total energy consumption has stabilized even as the growth of data centers has exploded. That's actually a testament to how much work has gone into being more energy efficient in these data centers. There's a study where they compared, you know, there are 4 workloads in Azure. The compute workload, the storage, exchange, SharePoint. Together, these account for about 50% of total energy in Azure data centers. They took those same workloads, running in some cases on a company's private data center, which is the alternative. And they compared the efficiencies of scale in just moving these workloads to rented VMs. And that's pretty encouraging. What did it take to get there? And by the way, for convenience and because I'm lazy, I'm borrowing slides that were available to me, and so you'll see a lot of Azure here. But much of what I'm saying has, you know, secular application. Google, AWS, they do very related things. Just in terms of how we operate our data centers, this is becoming a field in its own right. We, this community, should be taking a lion's share of the intellectual leadership then, okay? One of the prime uses of the cloud is to manage the cloud. You can bring machine learning to service analytics, okay? We should be thinking about these. These are making a big dent. More. When you think of a data center, you think of these pictures of little towns that are basically places to host computer farms. Increasingly, we're thinking of novel ways. Build something that's in a container that's submersible. That way your cooling costs go down. The ocean is cold enough, okay? This is the kind of innovation that the cloud is enabling because you can do things at scale. Security is another example. Used to be the case people didn't want to go to the cloud because they were concerned about security. Guess what? The major cloud players invest in the order of billions of dollars per year keeping up with security. No one company can do that, right? So security, these kinds of things are places where scale matters. As I said earlier, when you think of cloud, whether it's Microsoft, whether it's the others, I'll show you things in a moment. It's no longer just the monolithic cloud. The edge, and I'm defining edge broadly eventually to subsume what's on-prem in enterprises. Your car, it's a little computer, a little database, your plane, your elevator, your PDA, right? This is both the opportunity and the challenge. Because the ability to observe, gather data is so ubiquitous, there's nothing you can't aspire to do better because you can observe it, you can learn from it. But at the same time, data management, you mentioned the book, Database Management Systems. I keep consistently trying to revise it. The consistency, I keep trying. When I eventually do, I'm going to have to change the name because I don't think the old model of a database system that does governance, that lets you do RBAC for all your data, is valid anymore. The number of different repositories, the number of different locations, it's exploding. The concept of going to each and every one of those, stepping up and setting up your policies is ridiculous. But there's no alternative, right? The world is changing. And if you think about how people are moving to the cloud, they began by basically renting machines, IaaS. Rapidly now, it's moved to serverless or PaaS services. People come in and start at a level that's considerably above simply the machines. It's not that IaaS is going away, but all I'm saying is the higher levels of consumption are becoming common. And if you put all that together, what you see here, AWS, Google, us, we will all have similar stories. Cloud is no longer just about what's there. If you take, we announced something called Arc. Before that, things like Azure Stack, Anthos, Outpost. These are all statements that you want to look at all of your compute estate, wherever, in the cloud, on edge, on-prem, holistically. That's where the cloud is going. It's taking over, right? So from a data perspective, here's what that says to me. Data is going to be everywhere. It's going to be observed everywhere. It's going to be much of it centralized for analysis. But then you're also going to push it out to be closer to the consumption points. Edge, you may have little kiosks. Why? If you go into a 7-Eleven, advanced video analytics, what are you going to tell them? Put the servers in the refrigerator along with the Coke? No. You're going to have those servers managed by a public cloud company, but maybe in a little red booth like the phone book, the phone kiosks in Britain, right? On every street corner. How are you going to make that last meter of connectivity from the kiosk to the 7-Eleven? 5G, right? So all of these interesting technical convergences are going to change the landscape. And we database people have been thinking about memory hierarchies for a long time. Buffer management has bought many, many people little nice houses, tenure, right? Now, together with our buddies in the systems community, we can take this all the way out, right? And as we do it, we must also think about how to govern that data. How much time do I have? Excellent. So now let me segue. I'm basically, a data geek. So I'll give you my perspective on what's happening here through the lens of data today. In the 30 years I've been around, the cloud, other than perhaps CORD's relational model, has been the single biggest disruptor. You saw the enormous movement of workloads to the cloud. That means we need to squeeze every last bit of efficiency out of that. And the unique thing about the cloud is elasticity. You can get as much, as little of compute or storage instantly, orthogonally, independently. Our systems, data systems in particular, are not designed that way. We built them in an era where it took a year to buy and install a fleet of machines, database setup. We optimized for a scenario where things didn't fail, okay? We bought very, very expensive, reliable hardware. Now in the cloud, you go commodity, okay? How do you scale out? You know, this question has been lurking since MapReduce and the like, but across all workloads, scale out is becoming a norm. Another, if you think about how we manage concurrency, it's all been kind of mushed together. But now, if a VM fails, you can't afford to wait for it to come back. You have to separate state, as well as storage, the data, from the decision making in your app. Compute and storage have to be separated if you're going to be cloud native. Our first generation of systems in the cloud were not this way. We took on-prem designs, rented VMs, put the executables in there, added a dash of monitoring and updates, voila, cloud database service. The new generation, Amazon Aurora, Google BigQuery, Microsoft's Hyperscale, something we announced recently, Synapse. These are all examples, Cosmos DB, from Yahoo, good old peanuts, right? Hadoop as a new architectural paradigm. These are all examples that embody scale out, separation, and those are becoming mainstream, right? And that's turning the database architectures upside down. This is a picture from Gartner. If you look at the market segment, they say basically relational OLTP is the biggest segment, 67 billion. If you take NoSQL, that's 7 billion. Analytics, they split evenly between warehouses, the traditional relational warehouses, and the big data systems. And they say these are potentially $20, $21 billion market segments. Across the board, this separation I discussed is taking place. Okay, we are gutting and rebuilding these systems in the cloud, for the cloud. Let me give you a feel for what that means. What does a big data system mean? What does a Hadoop system in operation, really look like? Inside Microsoft, turns out they built something very like Hadoop, but they didn't open source it. Clemens, who is here somewhere, is very involved. If you're interested, be sure to talk to him. This is ginormous. The y-axis here is total amount of data in exabytes, okay? There's in the double digit exabytes at this point. The growth is explosive, okay? Every part of Microsoft runs on it. What do we do? The entire web is here, as an example. We do information extraction on the web. If you take our advertiser platforms, we do event processing to figure out the ROI on ad campaigns. If you look at your laptop, we look at whether the updates went well. At this point, it is a foundational tool, and the kind of work going on reflects all the things I described earlier, right? This feedback loop, enormous scale, but it's not a traditional data warehouse. It's built with scale out. It's built for large scale processing. By and large, it wasn't optimized for interactive analytics. And if you look at your traditional MPP warehouse, it's relational. It doesn't handle the diversity of data or scale, or extreme scale, I should say. But it is incredibly optimized for reliable, repeatable performance of complex query workloads with sophisticated workload management. If you go take a Teradata administrator and give him a traditional Hadoop system, it's not an apple-to-apple substitution. That's why these have stayed different segments. But you can borrow the ideas from the lake scale-out architectures, the cloud separation of state ideas, and bring them to bear with vectorized query processing, state-of-the-art query optimization. You can marry these two worlds, okay? And if you do, all kinds of goodness happens, right? Your scale-out can be fault-tolerant. You can use commodity resources in the cloud. And you know, in the interest of time, Magda is giving me the evil eye. I'll skip the details. But basically, by tracking tasks at a fine grain, you can do this marriage. By the way, we haven't written a paper yet, but we will eventually. Right? This is recent work. Net of it, when you do that, some pretty amazing things can happen. We just announced we could do TPCH, every query, at petabyte scale. The largest previous scale, to my knowledge, was about 100 terabytes, right? The largest current one is about 30 terabytes. But this is to say, we are in a time of enormous change, which means for this community, enormous opportunity. If you take OLTP, separation of state, same idea. Over and over, across the different workloads, we're doing this. We are making millions of lines of changes to code that produces tens of billions of dollars of annual revenue. That is a once-in-a-lifetime kind of upheaval. Okay? What can we do with it? I think we should aspire to do something transformative. The single biggest thing the world needs is not another data system. There are too many of them. There is too much complexity. The biggest thing I hear is not give me this other feature or run faster, my petabyte benchmark notwithstanding. People basically say to get shit done, I need to stitch together half a dozen of your blasted systems. And this is a royal pain, right? So how can we do better? Those systems are different for a reason. OLTP needs data represented a certain way, analytics a very different way. This is software physics. One size fits all ain't happening. The complexity is real. But why can't we do a better job of masking this complexity, right? I mean, a B-tree, after all, is a dual representation of data optimized for range queries. In the same way, why can't OLTP, NoSQL, analytics be seen as different representations? And by the way, notice that the cloud all of a sudden removed a huge obstacle. Earlier, those storage systems were discrete silos. Now, if it's all in cloud storage, be it Azure Blobs or S3 or whatever, you have the opportunity for these different heads to each look at the same data and interpret it differently, simultaneously. These are the opportunities we should embrace, okay? And if you do this, then I think we begin to address a real problem. Tools are complex today, okay? But the more complex tools get, the human ability to manage that complexity goes down. We need to make the management, the usability, far, far easier, right? That's the nexus that's going on here. Okay, and I'll stop here, time's up. But the thing to keep in mind is, when you think of use, don't stop at running queries, running transactions. With GDPR, with similar laws from across the world, the scrutiny has never been higher, okay, on securing privacy, governance, and doing all this across this complex ecosystem, the cloud again is opening up opportunities. So.
Thank you so much, Arjun. All right, so we have time for just a couple of quick questions, actually. I can bring you the mic. What questions did you have? Please?
So thanks, Raghu, for this great overview and great talk. So one question is, you talk about these grand challenges like, you know, security and scalability. So for the students in the room, how can we go and distill these grand challenges into someone actually working on a paper at a university with access to these public clouds?
So this is a great question. One thing I would say, internships, industry sponsorship of academic groups, and not just sponsorship by way of we'll fund your reception, but meaningful engagement, right? I think is critical. In some ways, open source, the greater availability of data, that helps. But for security, for example, some of the data that you really need, it's not really shareable, right? And without that grounding, it's hard. So I would say, be nice to each other. And especially if one of you is wearing a university t-shirt and the other's wearing an industry t-shirt, be very nice to each other.
Yeah. I have one question myself, but let me see if anyone else from the audience has a question before we wrap this up. Anyone has a question? So the question I have is, I mean, you talked about like the, you know, the fact that you have three, maybe four or five big data, cloud, public cloud offerings out there. And you know, as someone who's sort of thinking about it, you know, from what a university had or, you know, a startup had, is that where do you think a small team of innovative, driven researchers could sort of innovate and disrupt this market when you see this huge ownership by a few, like, for example, like, you know, BigQuery, you know, has this huge thing behind them because it's offered by Google, or, you know, the same way with the other, you know, database offerings. Where do you think people who want to innovate and disrupt the cloud market should focus on, given the big footprint of the public clouds?
The public cloud is something that's evolving rapidly, and much of that evolution is driven by ideas that come from outside the cloud vendors, right? You know, if you take the database world again, back in the day, we had IBM, Oracle, Sybase, three, four companies, and that was it. But that didn't keep the community from being incredibly fertile. And the companies that leveraged the best ideas did better, right? In the same way, I would say the cloud, it's just a new way of doing things. It's a new surface. But the ideas, the pictures you paint on it are still yours, right? And in terms of how you can create new value, new companies, and so on and so forth, if anything, it lowers the bar to getting to scale fast, right? You can take an idea, you can rent, maybe get enough seed money to take that to a group of people who might appreciate it. And if it's successful, you can expand incredibly rapidly, right? So with a few exceptions, like security, I actually think the playing field has never been more level.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Raghu.